And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your co-host, Ryan Burns. We have a big show this week. This is only going to be a one-show week with the holidays coming up this weekend and everything going on with everybody's schedule. So we have a lot to talk about today, a lot of Bison basketball, a lot of Bison football to get into. And joining me is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things for you on this Tuesday afternoon?
They're great. Very excited. This is a kind of a two-day week for me. I've got Thanksgiving-related travel plans that start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So wrapping things up pretty quickly this week, and going to talk a little Bison athletics with you before we do so.
So let's get into it. We got a lot to talk about. So let's start with that news part of our podcast, and let's get into it with the injuries. What did Coach Kleiman have to say yesterday, and how are you feeling about the injuries with a bye week coming up this week?
Well, I would say the first good news that Bison fans have gotten in a while as it pertains to an injury to a star defensive player, Pierre G. Tucker, a guy I really think is going to be, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I think is a guy that's going to be honored with an all-conference selection at the very least, that outside linebacker. He's a player that was kind of in a heap down there in Vermillion, had a knee injury, looked, you know, bad. They kind of all look bad on film, but the correct CL was injured. If you're looking to come back, it was an MCL injury. That's something where the worst one is a 6 to 8 week type of injury, and that's when you have a tear that you just let heal by itself. But sounds like there wasn't really any structural damage. So the grade one, you come back in four to six days. Grade two is you're more along that 1 to 2 weeks where you'd be, can he play, can he not play? But I think you're probably looking at a situation where Tucker's going to be out one game at the max. Certainly would be back for any type of a national championship situation in mid-January. But I know that NDSU's philosophy is always go 1-0 this week, so they're focused certainly on their game plan for the very next game, and I think that there's a chance that Tucker might be a part of that game plan.
How about some guys like Jalen Wimbush and Bruce Anderson? Any update there?
Yeah, Jalen had another shoulder thing. He's been dealing with some upper body stuff all season long. He's going to be more than likely out for the week as far as practice is concerned, and then he'll be more of a probably, I would say, a game time decision for that second round game. Depending on who it's against, though, it might not be a huge deal to be missing a cornerback if who I think they're going to play is who ends up being the opponent.
So, are you just going to leave us out on a cliffhanger there?
Or no, Bruce.
You want to mention that a little bit? Or?
Well, just Cal Poly runs the triple option, and so it's not a huge difference. If you believe this, Poly and Sandy, which they said they weren't going to do, the two teams that are playing for the right to play NDSU played each other already this season. Cal Poly won pretty handily. They run a triple option scheme. They'll probably throw the ball 5 or 6 times total. So not having Jalen Wimbush at corner is not going to be a game changer, more than likely, for that game. And then as far as Bruce Anderson is concerned, he had one offensive snap. They brought him in motion, and then he ran a wheel route, took two guys with him, and opened up an inside screen for Jeff Ilias, and was also on the kickoff coverage team, bringing some depth there, giving a few defensive players a blow. So Bruce is a guy I anticipate to be in 2 weeks at 100%. Whether that means he goes back to kick returner or they use him as a running back / slot receiver is going to be based, I think, on the mobility of that ankle. But that's going to give him plenty of time to recover. I think they feel really good about how he dealt with the stress that playing in that South Dakota game put on the ankle. I think they feel pretty good about that.
All right, so let's transition to the big news from the last 48 hours or so, and that's that the Bison have the number one overall seed in the recently announced college football playoff. The other top four seeds are the number two team is Eastern Washington, who NDSU beat earlier in the season. Number three team is Jacksonville State, and number four is James Madison. And I know we'll get into it a little bit later, Ross, but I'm guessing there's no surprise that NDSU sticks with and maintains their number one overall seed.
No, I mean, that this was something that they had changed in the week prior to move NDSU up to number one. I think they have the unquestioned most difficult schedule in FCS. I think it's the most difficult schedule they've ever played, even the year that they scheduled Kansas State. And whether you think Kansas State's better than this Iowa team, I don't really care. Iowa's got a chance to, I think, go 9-3 this Friday against Nebraska. That Kansas State team won a bowl game, I think, to go to 8-5. So your opinion kind of is what it is. But even during that Kansas State season, NDSU still had those cupcake games, the games to get the depth in. The Bison didn't. All they did was play a nationally televised game against Charleston Southern, play a game against the number two team in the country, and then play a game against Iowa. So this was the toughest slate they've ever had. And to be rewarded by getting through it with one loss and being the number one overall seed, I think is just. I have no issue with that as biased, I guess, as you may think that I would be in such a situation.
So knowing your bias, the coaches poll and Stats FCS poll came out. NDSU was number three in the coaches poll, with Sam Houston and Jacksonville State being the number one and the number two teams in both polls. And actually in the Stats poll, NDSU is number four. So what are your thoughts on just the discrepancy between the college football playoff to the coaches poll to the Stats poll?
I think that there's a little bit of Bison fatigue potentially between the media and the coaches, sick of NDSU, sick of them always being number one. And then just, I think, a general lack of understanding and just how much of a difference, in my opinion, there is between the Valley and every other conference in the FCS. And I do very much believe that. I was talking to a friend of mine about the difference between South Dakota State and North Dakota, who are seeded seventh and eighth. We'll get into that. But just, well, you know, the Big Sky is the number three conference in FCS, and that might be true, but there's a huge difference between the Valley and the number two conference. I mean, this is just a completely different level of play. You see that every year, the FCS-FBS games. You saw, I believe, Northern Iowa, Illinois State, and NDSU all defeat not just an FBS team, but a Power 5 team. That kind of stuff happens every single season. Yes, NDSU's a huge part of that. But, I mean, I think the Valley, to be honest with you, is a better conference than the Sun Belt. I think it's probably a better conference than the MAC, top to bottom. I know Western Michigan's pretty good. I'd actually love to see NDSU play Western Michigan. But it's just a higher level of football, I think, than the media maybe knows, that just pays attention to box scores and that maybe other athletic directors want to admit.
So another thing that we got to talk about is another Bison player was named Player of the Week this week. Zach Johnson was the Missouri Valley O-lineman of the week. He had eight knockdowns as NDSU was able to rush for 369 yards against South Dakota. Guessing there's not a lot of surprise there in that, Ross.
No, I'd have to go take a look. We get really good notes from the sports information department every week, and it'd be interesting to see just how many different linemen and just how often a Bison offensive lineman has been MBFC Player of the Week. It seems like it's every other week about that it happens, and I was really impressed with Zach. I was specifically impressed with Colin Connor and impressed again with Jack Plankers in this game. I felt like the Bison offensive line did really well. I understand that University of South Dakota is not a very good defense, but as far as assignment and technique. I really appreciated what Zach did and continue to maintain that he's probably one of those 12, 13 guards across all of college football that's going to get a chance at the next level. I mentioned, you know, tackles being converted to guard in the pros, but there are still a few interior offensive linemen that get the call, and man, he is really, really good. First team All-American, in my opinion, Zach Johnson.
So finally, with the final news note we have, I believe that the individual awards are going to be coming out tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And how many Bison do you think are going to be involved in those awards?
Well, that's the thing, is I was a little bit confused. I think they're just going to do the Valley, of course, is a I call it a mid-major league. So they, like the Summit League and many other leagues, will do newcomer of the year as opposed to freshman of the year, because you have your Chris Strevlers, you have, well, even, you know, your King Fraziers, your guys that come in from other programs. It's a transient league. People know that. So you're going to have your newcomer of the year, your offensive defensive player of the year, your coach of the year awards. I don't think the all-conference teams will be announced on Wednesday, but I could be also completely wrong on that. I'd have to check the email blast over one more time, but I think it's just the individual awards that are being awarded on Wednesday. I would be very shocked, to be honest with you, to see any Bison. Not generally a thing that the coaches will do, because NDSU is such a balanced program and so good at so many different positions. Honestly, who would possibly be the guy for the offense? There isn't one. As far as the defense, I think Nick DeLuca was probably preseason player of the year, but he's gone, and it's not going to go to Stumpford Tucker. It's probably not going to go to Greg Menard. It's going to go to some player on a weaker defense that racked up, you know, huge eye-popping stats. So I'd be very surprised for Bison fans to get any good news on Wednesday.
All right, so let's switch over to our Pro Bison update of the podcast. Let's start with Carson Wentz. I know he was out in Seattle this week. How did things go there, and how did the Eagles do?
The Eagles, you know, that's a tough test. That's a very difficult place to play. I've got, as a Packer fan, I've got a lot of horrible memories from Seattle, the Fail Mary, the 2014 NFC Championship game. Lots of dark, dark days, and the Legion of Boom and the 12s are very difficult to deal with. And Carson had two picks. He also threw two touchdowns. He was a couple of boneheaded Nelson Aguilar plays away from a 300-yard game against a very good secondary. He put it up 45 times. Probably not something that he's probably crazy about it, but I think that Eagles coaching staff would like to have had that ratcheted down a little bit, playing from behind the whole time. But in a game where the haters would have probably liked to see Carson play awful, he played just okay, and that's fine. I mean, that's going to be one of the more difficult tests that Carson will have all season long. So pretty impressed there. C.J. Smith up to 14 snaps. He's got himself pretty much on every special teams unit there is. He's, I believe, probably one injury in the secondary away from getting some time on defense. So good for CJ. I was really, really paying attention to what Indy's health status was as far as their offensive line is concerned, because of where they see Joe Haig long term. That's a team that has been beat up all year long. That's how Joe Haig got into the lineup. So I've been waiting all season for that offensive line to get completely healthy, to find out exactly what their preferred five is. And their preferred five right now has Joe Haig as the starting right tackle. It's the position that when I evaluated him for Cheesehead TV, that's where I put him. I said he can play left guard, right tackle, but he's, I think, a 10-year starter at right tackle in the league. We'll see if he and Costanzo are the two tackles for Andy Luck for the rest of his career. I mean, I think that's something that really could happen, and I'd be more than happy for Joe if that were the case. Everybody else was pretty much on bye week. Kyle Emanuel's Chargers, Marcus's Jets, and Billy Turner's Broncos were all off this week. And I would say friend of the podcast, but it wasn't this podcast. But Brock Jensen, who I've interviewed in the past and is the all-time winningest quarterback in NCAA Division I, he will be I don't know if he's starting. He started one of the playoff games, but he will be quarterbacking for the Ottawa Redblacks in the Grey Cup. And for those of you that don't know what that is Canada's Super Bowl.
All right, so let's get into this game, this South Dakota versus North Dakota State game where the Bison emerge with a 28-21 victory. And first, we got to talk a little Chris Drevler. He goes 16 of 30 on the day, 184 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions through the air, and then he's able to get 63 yards on 15 carries with a rushing touchdown. What were your first and initial thoughts on the way Chris Drevler played against the Bison?
Such a good athlete. I'm really impressed by him. Mentioned that I didn't like what Nielsen did schematically with him. I would basically run Florida's offense when they had Tim Tebow. That's the type of player at the FCS level that he reminds me of. I know Tim Tebow is one of the best players in the history of college football, but just a guy with more size than speed as far as his running ability is concerned. And a guy with a herky-jerky throwing motion that you're going to want to limit the type of throws that you ask him to make. Make a lot of vertical throws, make a lot of crossing route throws that are easy open throws. And I think Nielsen pretty much just stuck Strebler in his normal system that I recognize from his time at Western Illinois. I understand, though, why he did that. I mean, this is a transfer kid who was at Minnesota for a while. Not going to be able to give a lot of years to this South Dakota program, so why not teach the other 10 guys on offense and the second stringers how to run Nielsen's system if he plans on being there for a while? That, I think, is potentially the question. But just was really impressed with him. I would say, you know, to keep him under 70 yards rushing with 15 attempts would be exactly what you're looking for, especially after what happened against the other South Dakota team in Taryn Christian. A lot of that passing production came on a couple of throws. One was an absolute 50-50 ball to Van Roekel down the right sideline, who made a fantastic catch against Jalen Allison, who was in perfect position. Sometimes that kind of stuff happens. And then the other thing that I really appreciated that Strebler was able to do that I didn't see from Nielsen when he was with WIU was the tempo stuff that they did. And it was kind of like surprise tempo stuff. You see a lot of conventional offenses like NDSU has, and then you see no huddle offenses like Eastern Washington trying to get up to the line right away. USD ran this surprise no huddle every once in a while when they felt like they had NDSU cooked. They would run up to the line and have a play called and just go, and that's how they scored that first touchdown. Takari Carpenter was one-on-one with Jalen Wimbush, who wasn't set, blew right past him, and Strebler hit him on an easy nine route for a touchdown. So besides, you know, that kind of junky stuff, it was really a successful game containing Strebler. I think anytime you contain that South Dakota offense to 21 points, you did just fine.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the punting game. I know that this is something that you and I like to talk about. You got to make sure specialists are involved, but that South Dakota punter was absolutely fantastic. Six punts on the day for a 51.8 average. He only had one touchback, 350-plus yard bombs, and two inside the 20. That is an absolute weapon in Miles Bergner. That South Dakota punter is legit.
Yeah, he was very impressive. Saw via social media that after the game that he was going to, as he put it, put that red helmet back on one more time. He's been invited to the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, which is an all-star game, of course, a pre-draft process type of all-star game. And a guy, I mean, I don't know if he's as good as Ben LeCompte was last season. Ben spent a little bit of time with the Bears, ultimately, not with a pro team at this time. So I don't know if he's any better than LeCompte or if he has any better chance than LeCompte, but he's going to get a shot at pro ball. I felt very, very impressive, and what a weapon he is for that South Dakota defense that struggles a lot. I think he gives them long fields, which maybe potentially attributes to their awful yardage averages, giving up such long fields on every possession. But Bergner, very, very good.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about Jalen Wimbush. We talked about in the injury part of this podcast that he's a little nicked up. Do you think that had a little bit to do with his play on Saturday?
Yeah, I really do think so. I think that was probably the worst game I've seen from Wimbush all season long. But I don't think that was probably all his fault. I think he is a little bit nicked up. He was trying to gut it out. Quentin McCoy came in for him on a number of occasions. Quentin actually gave up the last touchdown there when it was 21-28, which is, of course, the final score. But I just felt like from a tackling perspective, it was not a super great game from Wimbush. He gave up the long touchdown when he wasn't quite set. I don't know how much I put that on him, really, than the coaching staff's ability to get them ready for that surprise no huddle. But gave up a couple of things in front of him, too, when he had safety help, which is, you know, part of that NDSC defense. You don't give up completions beyond the sticks when underneath you when you have safety help when they are playing that Tampa 2. So that was kind of just disconcerting to watch him after his very impressive season-long development from the safety position to the cornerback position. So it didn't surprise me at all for Kleiman to make the comment on Monday that Wimbush is hurt and that he's going to be potentially taking some practice time off. That was very, very unsurprising. I just wasn't impressed with Jalen on film.
So let's talk more about the passing game. Easton Stick completes 65% of his passes for 3 touchdowns on the day, 1 to Shepard, 1 to Ilias, 1 to Wentz. Looks like this passing game took a little bit of a step forward against South Dakota.
Certainly. I mean, it just appeared to be more of a weapon that was available if you need it. And I don't think it really mattered, though. The game wasn't out of reach, really, until the very end. I think NDSU kind of did what they wanted on the ground, but they did take the chance to get their passing game going a little bit. And I was very impressed with Easton. Another physical error on the interception. I had no problem with the read. He had one-on-one coverage on the outside with R.J. Rzendowski, somebody who's been coming up with contested catches all season long. But he missed short and inside, and against on a coverage like that, that's where you can't miss. You use the sideline. As they always say, put it where only your guy can get it, and that's kind of the exact opposite of what happened. He underthrew him, missed inside. The corner was in perfect position to make the play, and R.J. still almost made it a 50-50 play. But the 3 touchdown passes were really special. The drop in the bucket to Darius Shepard is one of the best throws I've ever seen him make. Running to his right, where I think he's just an assassin on the edge out there. I think his run-pass option game is maybe a little bit underutilized in this offense. There's nothing I would rather see if I'm a Bison fan than Easton Stick rolling right, because you're either probably going to get a first down on the ground or you're going to get a big play through the air. And to adjust that Darius Shepard crossing route and drop it in over the safety for a touchdown was impressive. I really appreciate the pace of his back shoulder throws. The throw to Ilias was another back shoulder throw. That's an advanced timing route. That's not something you're going to see in a lot of college offenses. Probably one of the reasons why Carson Wentz was so readily available to take over in Philadelphia. Yes, he's a great player, but that Bison system is pretty darn full of NFL-type looks and things that they're going to ask a young quarterback to do. So I was impressed with that. And then an arm strength show-off, really, with that Connor Wentz touchdown. That was on the run into a tight window, threw it as hard as he could right between the 8 and the 7. He was on the run. Wentz was on the run. Just an impressive play overall, no question about it. So the 3 touchdown passes were beautiful. I didn't have any problem with the read on the interception. I was overall very impressed with Stick's play on the day.
The Bison running backs and just the running game on the day had a lot of success. 52 carries for 369 yards. That's over a 7 yards per carry average. And you look at the 2 main running backs, King Frazier goes 22 carries for 91 yards and a score. But then you see Lance Dunn get in there, 14 carries, 145 yards. That's over 10 yards a carry. You know, you look at these 2 running backs combining for 36 carries. I know that you talked about this in your Upon film review. You know, Lance Dunn in this role, do you think he's, you know, this is where he is best in terms of that role, between somewhere between 13 and 17 carries a game, while King, you know, has the load of the work? Or how do you think this Bison running back split should be able to go forward here in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I would like to see Bruce Anderson get a lot of work. I would like to see a little bit more work for Chase Morlock as the other fullbacks and tight ends get healthy, and he can focus on having the ball in his hands and not blocking so much. But I just was really impressed, I guess, by the way that they were able to use King Frazier to keep Lance Dunn fresh. Lance Dunn is obviously the home run hitter. He's the speed. He's the star. Just, I guess, going into next season, I just don't want him to be a 26, 28, 30 carry guy. That's not what you do with a 5'9 running back with that kind of speed. I hope they're able to use Purifoy a little bit in the Frazier role, and then just use Bruce Anderson and Lance Dunn for some of that heavy or, you know, big play, hard hitting stuff. I like the idea of having a grinder to keep these speed backs fresh. I just was, you know, kind of making the point, I guess, that I was surprised to see, with Chase being as healthy as he is, getting Brock Robbins back, just how much of the King and Lance show it was.
Another guy I want to talk about is Jeff Ilias. You look at his game log from the last five games, he scored a touchdown in four out of the last five games. I mean, he's really becoming a red zone target for Easton Stick and Company.
Yeah, he's a heck of a matchup for an FCS team with his frame and his speed. He really is too big for cornerbacks and too fast for linebackers. And depending on where he lines up, it's difficult sometimes to get a coverage safety on him. I think, you know, they can use him spread out wide like they did for the last touchdown. They can run him out of the slot. The touchdown that he scored in the previous road game was out of the play action. He was in the slot. It was actually it looked a lot like what Darius Shepherd was able to run. Darius ran out of the slot as well, but he's just turning into a star. His ability to block and do the things that they need him to do from a fullbacks and tight end perspective has gotten him to a place in his game where teams don't know what's coming when he's on the field. When he was a redshirt freshman, if he was on the field, they knew it was a pass. Now they can use all sorts of different formations with the exact same personnel, and that's big. When you can have Jeff play the X, the slot, have him play fullback or inline tight end, you don't have to make personnel changes to mess with what the other team is trying to do defensively, and that's a matchup problem that is pretty uncoverable and is very difficult to adjust to when you're the other defense. And the only way to make it more effective is to actually cash in and actually consistently convert on those attempts, and that's exactly what he's doing. And I mean, I absolutely expect him to continue to be Stick's number one red zone target, and it's not even just a red zone thing. A lot of his receptions for touchdowns have come from 25, 30 yards away. This is not a goal line fade type of guy. Jeff Ilias has become a pretty complete football player, whether it's receiver or tight end, however you want to look at it. I've been very, very impressed with Jeff this season, and I think Bison fans have to be extremely excited that another North Dakota native looks to be a star for possibly the next two seasons.
Let's talk about Mr. Consistency next, and that is Greg Menard. He has had a sack and tackle for loss in every game this season except for one. And you look at what he does against South Dakota on Saturday, six total tackles, a tackle for loss and a sack and a forced fumble. He is just the most consistent player on this Bison defense, and he continues to play at a high level.
Yeah, you talk about Greg Menard. You go back and listen to the interview that he and I did talking about, you know, just waiting for that big game to come, that splash game, and I feel terrible for him because you knew it wasn't coming this week because the Bison defenders were going to be asked to stay in their lane and contain Chris Strebler and make him make bad throws. You know it's probably not coming in 2 weeks against Cal Poly because they're going to run the triple option. He's not going to have a four-sack game against the triple option. And so, and then potentially even after that, South Dakota State comes into town and he's got to stay in his lane against Terran Christian. It's a tough a tough road to hoe here if Greg Menard's really looking for that superstar breakout performance. But it is so difficult to have consistency of that level in a game as hit or miss as pass rushing. And I just hope Bison fans appreciate how impressive Greg Menard has been all season long, even though he didn't have the dominant performances like he did as a sophomore a season ago. This was another, I think, first-team all-conference performance out of number 96.
So finally, as we wrap up this South Dakota game breakdown, we have to talk about what I know Coach Kleiman really enjoyed when you asked him the question, and that's about the scoring woes in the second half. NDSU doesn't score for the last 26 minutes and 30 seconds, and I know, again, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to Coach Kleiman address that question from Ross. But again, this has to be something that has to be addressed here going forward, don't you think?
Well, I didn't really get to phrase that the way that I wanted, and yet he did get upset. My point was, in the post game, the comments that he had, Coach Kleiman mentioned the chance to end the game. And like he said, you know, Nielsen's a very good coach. South Dakota was never going to quit. But you go up 35-14, the competitive balance of that game's probably over. They had a chance to do that on the drive that Easton Stick threw an interception on second and one. I am a huge fan of going deep on second and one. It's like my favorite play call. It's the football strategy hill that I would have chosen to die on if I hadn't chosen to die on the onside kick when you get to kick off from the 50-yard line hill. Those are my two hills. But the issue of not being able to put teams away like they have in the past has been a problem all season long. It lost them the South Dakota State game. It made a lot of the other road games this season much more worrisome than they needed to be. This is a Bison team that I feel like is very good, but struggles scoring at the end of games. I mean, they are not putting teams away with late game touchdowns. And I just don't know how fair it was of Kleiman to be that dismissive of that question. Yes, I understand the 10-1 is very important. I understand that you know, they are not going to ask for game recaps when they look at your 10-1 record. They're going to see the wins, and I understand how difficult it is to win. I understand how difficult it is to win on the road, but the ability of the Bison to score early in games, and then the fact that that just automatic or all of a sudden shuts down in the fourth quarter, to me, it's a legitimate concern. I don't think it's a big deal going into the playoffs, though. This is has not been a problem at home, with the exception of the South Dakota State game. The first two games were shootouts where the Bison were able to get important late touchdowns. Every other home game, I think, was pretty much a blowout. The Youngstown State game, I know, was a blowout. Illinois State was not really very close. And then Senior Day wasn't particularly close either against Indiana State. This is a team that is pretty darn good. Fans, I think, too, are hoping for a little bit more production when it's time to close out games. That's all.
So let's get into this Bison football playoff preview, and we have to start with this weekend's game, and that's going to be the Cal Poly versus San Diego. The winner gets to come up to the Fargo Dome. So what are you expecting between these two teams, and which team is more or is most likely to be coming to Fargo next weekend?
Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned, that the committee talked about not wanting to have first-round game rematches. They were pretty much unable to do that as far as avoiding these games where teams had already played each other in the non-conference. Cal Poly and San Diego did play each other. Cal Poly won pretty convincingly. Cal Poly's a good Big Sky team that I think probably ran into some bad luck with their quarterback getting injured for a number of games there. But I think that that's going to be the team that comes out of that game. I'd be very surprised if NDSU didn't have to deal with Cal Poly. We'll get into that game a little bit more, kind of save it for next week, because without a game to break down, next week probably going to also be a one-show week. So we'll get into Poly a little bit more, but those are the basics that you need to know. I would call them a heavy favorite. They run the triple option. That's what NDSU needs to be ready for. And certainly something to pay attention to, Pierre G. Tucker's status as outside linebackers are important in the run option game.
So if NDSU is able to beat Cal Poly and or San Diego at home on the 3rd, it appears that they're likely going to be taking on South Dakota State, a matchup from earlier this season. How do you think things turn out the second time around?
Well, I think they're going to have the Taron Christian run scouted. That's a big deal. I think Pierre Tucker's availability would be bigger for that game, really, than even for Cal Poly. The Bison will generally play a 4-4 against a traditional option team. They will bring in the strong safety down, which in this case would be Robbie Grimsley. And then the strong side linebacker, which is where Pierre plays, and the middle linebacker, which would be Matt Plank. They'll have fullback responsibilities. And then the defensive ends and the outside linebackers will have pitch responsibilities. There aren't a lot of lateral movements and fullback responsibilities on a triple option. So you're really going to see like MJ Stumpf and Robbie Grimsley, as well as Brad Ambrosius and Greg Menard. They're going to be stressed on those plays, I think, more than the Sam linebacker would be. But against South Dakota State, you're playing in space in the nickel defense. And I really feel a lot better about the nickel defense that doesn't have Matt Plank in it. That's no disrespect to Matt Plank, but just athletically, Pierre is a much better pass defender. His dominance over those crossing routes really sends a message and has in a number of games. You're not going to want to run a five-yard cross with Jake Winicky into Pierre Tucker because there's a chance that Jake Winicky is not going to keep playing in that game. Dallas Goddard, obviously a player that really concerns you because, in my opinion, the Bison start two free safeties. I know Robbie plays strong, but he's not a real big guy, and that was apparent with the success that Goddard was able to have in the Fargo Dome. I don't have as big of a concern about Winicky. He's a very good player, but so is Jalen Allison. My concern, I think, definitely lies with containing Taron Christian and finding a way to slow down Dallas Goddard, because letting him clear the linebackers and get to Trey and Robbie with basically a free release was not a great plan going into that last Saturday game.
And when you look at this bracket as a whole, if NDSU were able to win their first two games, they'd be matched up more than likely against James Madison or Sam Houston State. How do you think that compares when you look at the other side of the bracket?
The other side of the bracket, I think, is a much easier path. That's not surprising. I talked about Bison fatigue. Even though economically it's not a great idea for the NCAA to stack the deck against NDSU, it appears as though it's at least a little bit what has happened. I would much rather be on the EWU side of the bracket than the North Dakota State side, which is exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to do to a number one seed. But that's pretty easy pickings. As far as though the Sam Houston State matchup or the JMU matchup, I honestly think, and this has happened to the Bison in the past, that you're going to look at a semifinal game that's kind of a relief. I think if they can get through Cal Poly, beat that option, and then if they can get through South Dakota State in the playoff for, God, I don't know how many times it has been, but they get a little bit of revenge, a la the Montana game a season ago. They get a little bit of revenge. They play South Dakota State and beat them. I would have them as probably two touchdown favorites over either Sam Houston or James Madison. I think that that's going to be, you know, you talk about those non-conference, and I know Pauly's non-conference, but they run a triple option, so it doesn't count. But those non-conference opponents that play playoff games in the Fargo Dome, generally losing by 20 or more points, that's going to be a generally losing by 20 or more points. That Sam Houston State team is a team that knows that NDSU pretty much owns it because of the way that they're matched up with them schematically.
I know before we wrap up our football talk here, I know you really want to talk about that North Dakota being selected over SDSU, North Dakota being the 7th seed, South Dakota State being the 8th seed. I'll let you step up on your soapbox and get a little bit off your chest here.
Well, it's just tough. You know, you've got a team in South Dakota State that has a win over the number one overall seed, and then you've got a team in North Dakota that has one win over a playoff team. They beat Cal Poly when Cal Poly's starting quarterback was hurt. That's it. They needed a miracle comeback to beat Northern Arizona at home. They needed three overtimes to beat the seventh best team in the Valley, the University of South Dakota, at home. They needed a comeback and three overtimes to beat the Yotes. This is not a particularly good football team. I think they're probably the 14th, 15th, maybe 16th best team in the country. I think they would have gone about 4-4 in the Valley and probably missed the playoffs. But such is life in the Big Sky. Yes, they have a head-to-head win in the South, or a common opponent win in the South Dakota sense that, yes, the USD lost to Pauley, but they lost to Pauley with their starting QB. And QBs that understand that triple option offense are very, very valuable. I don't think there's any question about that. South Dakota State's other two losses were to TCU and to North Dakota State, of course. And those are two extremely good programs. NDSU or UND lost to Stony Brook, not a playoff team, and then lost to Bowling Green, which is one of the worst teams in the MAC. And yes, that is an FBS loss, but it's a pretty bad FBS loss. So I I've seen both teams play on a number of occasions. I've had to watch some UND football just for keeping up on the playoff seeding hunt. And I've just seen them both play. And I got to tell you, if that game is at a neutral field in Hankinson, North Dakota, about halfway between the two games, I would have to get 10 or 13 points if I'm either going to consider taking UND. I really think that there's that much of a difference in talent. I would have definitely put UND 8, South Dakota State 7, and potentially you would have seen North Dakota State, South Dakota State down in Frisco, and how awesome would that have been? I mean, it would be a very stressful time for me, probably, but UND's not going to Frisco. If they win their first playoff game, I'd be very surprised. And then if they don't, they'll just get throttled by Eastern Washington.
So let's switch over to some basketball talk. Let's talk about that High Point tournament. The Bison go 2-1 over the weekend, a 66-59 opening game win over Navy. They then lost by 11 points to Greensboro the following day, and then they really took a schlacking to High Point in a 26-point victory. 2-1 over the weekend, just as you predicted, Ross.
Yeah, we talked about it last time. We said, well, who are they going to lose to? I don't know if any of these, and I think None of us really knew how good any of these teams were. I talked to someone on staff after this and said, did you play awful against Greensboro or did you play about as well as you could against High Point? And he said both. I mean, they should have probably beaten Greensboro, I think, in a, in 10 times they probably beat them 7, but this was that one time when they had 20 turnovers, and that was an issue. And as far as the Navy game, that's a good service academy. And then they played their best game of the season against High Point for sure. Our guy, P. Smoove, though, tournament MVP.
P. Smoove.
Yeah, very impressive work from Paul, working on that first team All Summit League performance. I really think as a junior, even potentially a guy that you could look at as Summit League Player of the Year. I worry a little bit for the chances of that. Just based on NDSU's balance, scoring so many different guys that they can go to get buckets at no point in this season, barring injury, is Paul going to have to carry the team on the offensive or defensive ends. But most valuable player of that tournament had a big, big game against the host team and was able to sit for parts of the end of that game. And then, of course, against the loss against Greensboro, I'll talk a little bit about the game against Navy. That was more of a back and forth. That was pretty classic mid-major basketball. I thought NDSU was pretty sloppy there. I thought that the free throw shooting was really a problem against Navy, but I wanted to make special mention of that game because of just how impressed I was with the young kids. Tyson Ward, Dang Gu, really played well, and they don't win that game against Navy without those two freshmen. There's just no way. I was very impressed on a game when Carlin and Paul really struggled, those two came to play, and they kept the Bison in the game long enough for them to make that late game run and get the win. The Greensboro game was really bad. David likes to run a kind of a dribble weave where you're getting multiple ball screens, you're getting multiple isolation looks, drives and kicks. It's a great offense for NDSU's personnel. I know a lot of people don't like it. But it really does. It gives a lot of opportunities for backdoor cuts. It opens up the floor for Dexter Warner. There's a lot of things that it does well. One of the things it does not do well is work against the zone defense. It doesn't work against the zone defense because if you're weaving, they're just going to stand there and watch you weave. I mean, this is a defense that's going to stay put, cover their zone, as the name obviously entails. And they went from a press that caused a lot of turnovers right into a zone that caused a lot of offensive confusion for the Bison. So that's a look you're definitely going to see from opposing teams. I would say early on in the season is both a press and a zone for teams that don't do what NDSU does. I mean, NDSU talks over and over and over again about doing the things that make them good. A team that's not going to make a ton of adjustments. Teams that make a ton of adjustments are going to play press and zone against NDSU until they prove that they can play better. And then that game against High Point was unbelievable. If you think that this is a Bison team who should be the favorite to win the Summit League and potentially be the second team in school history to win an NCAA tournament game, then you want to go back and watch that game against High Point. It was the epitome of Bison basketball under David Richmond. You had five guys on the floor all about the same height, switching on everything, switching on picks, just guarding unbelievably well, forcing turnovers, forcing bad shots, rebounding the ball well despite their size, and then offensively shooting the ball on an extremely high level, absolutely decimating the host team. I believe High Point was the – I'd have to go back and check, but I believe High Point was the other 2-1 team from the weekend, so very impressive to blow them out. That's a school that has won five consecutive Big South regular season championships and been to a number of NC2As. I would say that the Big South is not on the level of the Summit, but this is a league championship program year in and year out, and winning is often a culture. You see that throughout college athletics, and just I was so impressed by what NDSU was able to do against High Point and potentially is a very high-level team. You talk about that Arkansas State win to open up the Shack was kind of considered a whatever. Well, they just beat Georgetown, and that's a game I think that's going to help potentially in a resume situation where you're trying to figure out is NDSU a 14 or a 13 or a 12 in the case that they potentially win that Summit League tournament in March. So a pretty good weekend for Bison basketball. With the, you know, they're kind of a black mark against Greensboro there, but this is a team that has a lot of promise.
Let's talk a little bit about A.J. Jacobson, because you look at where the Bison would have been without him against Greensboro. On the weekend, Ross, he goes 8 of 10 from 3, and he goes 6 of 6 versus Greensboro from behind the arc. He has been absolutely lights out from distance here to start the season.
Yeah, he's leading the free world in three-point percentage. I think he's shooting 81%. That's obviously not a sustainable number, but that 81% is on enough attempts so far to qualify. So if you go to NCAA.com and you look up the leading free throw shooter or leading three-point shooter in the country, that's Fargo's own A.J. Jacobson. Very impressive. I've always liked his stroke. Very impressed, honestly, with his ability to defend this season. Been kind of a liability in the past playing that four. I wouldn't say he's been a lockdown defender this year, but a little bit better protecting the rim, guarding his man. They played a couple of smaller teams, which I understand is part of it, but I really think that Jacobson's been playing at an all-league level this year. A guy, I think that after Lawrence and Taylor, people thought that Jacobson would potentially be that next Summit League Player of the Year type of guy for this NDSU program. And this year, I think you're seeing more flashes of that than you saw a season ago during his sophomore year.
Let's talk a little Tyson Ward. He's able to come up with some big performances over the weekend, especially against Navy, 4 of 5 from the field. He also gets 3 boards there, and he's very efficient as well, 4 of 5, and then 2 of 3 from behind the arc. The true freshman playing some meaningful minutes for Coach Richmond and staff.
Yeah, definitely impressed by Tyson. Coach Richmond's been talking a lot recently about Tyson and how he's a high-level player, shoots the ball at a high level, and he's consistently impressed by Tyson's game during practice and even his game during this season, with the obvious exception of shooting the ball poorly those first few games. I think at one point he was 0 for 12. But this is a kid that's really fearless. And for being a true freshman, that's impressive. When he wants to get his shot, it's going up. I think there are times maybe that makes the staff a little bit nervous. But the kind of timid nature that you see from some true freshmen just doesn't exist for Tyson Ward. If he wants a bucket, he's going to go and get it. There were some of those corner threes where he's putting it up as soon as he touches it. And that's good, because that's obviously when you're going to be the most open. That's how closing out works. So I was impressed with Tyson. Really, though, I mean, you said it. Without his ability to score the ball in big moments against Navy, they probably go 1-2 this weekend, and we're having a very different conversation. I really like Tyson as a player. I think that he has the athletic ability to be a long defender and be in that Corey Brown mold. But I think at this point in his career, he is showing a lot more offensively than Corey Brown did at the same point in his career. And I'm excited for Tyson Ward's future. I think that he'll be a real leader on this team when the wings like Jacobson and Miller are gone.
When we look at this Bison basketball squad as well from their 2-1 weekend, one thing that stands out to me is the number of turnovers they had. They have 12, 16, and 20 turnovers in their three games, so an average of 16 turnovers a game. That is a very high number, and that's a number that's got to come down here as the non-conference continues to go on.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. That's some old school teachings never get old, and not turning the ball over and shooting free throws are two things that did not go well and have not gone well so far this season for North Dakota State. And they're two things that have to improve. The Bison have to do better from the free throw line if they're going to win close games. I'm not convinced that they've had that cost them a game this season. That's obviously a one loss team, and I don't think anything that happened at the free throw line could have prevented what happened against Greensboro. But that Navy game was a lot closer than it had to be because of free throws. And this is a team with pretty good shooters, and you generally hope that a team with good shooters shoots it well from the line. Specifically, Carlin Dupree and Dexter Werner need to do a better job of shooting free throws. The turnover thing is a really big issue. I think you have a lineup now. With the decision to go with Dupree over Gu, you've got three kids that came into NDSU recruited as point guards, and you would hope at that point then that they can dribble the ball and take care of it. I think you had a few A.J. Jacobson turnovers. He's the guy inbounding the ball. He's the guy that gets that first pass in the press breaker. Maybe something you want to do a little bit different and use the fact that you've got three ball handlers there as opposed to sending two of the three down the floor and having Kai and AJ deal with all that ball pressure. But it's just too many turnovers for a team full of guys that are supposed to be able to handle the ball. And I anticipate, an emphasis on taking care of the basketball during this week of practice, because they've got some pretty big ones coming up.
I know you touched on free throws a little bit, but I want to make sure we spend a little bit of time here, because you look at each one of the three games NDSU is shooting their free throws in the 60th percentile. That's something I'd really like to see get into the 70th, at least, because when you get in these tight ball games, it usually does come down to small things like turnovers and free throws, and that's one area this team really does have to improve.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It's just difficult to talk about. I mean, you end up, and I've already been yelled at by one NDSU head coach. I mean, what do you say? Hey, Dave, how do you shoot better free throws? Well, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing really that can be done. I think free throws are a lot like putting. It's pretty mental. It's not like these guys aren't shooting free throws before and after practice, but there's a kind of a hot hand into it that has to get going. These guys have to start seeing it go through the basket. You see a guy like Andre Iguodala, who was a fantastic free throw shooter earlier in his career, got the yips. And over the course of the past couple of seasons has been a guy that you foul on purpose and send to the line because it's just a mental issue. So the free throws, if you have talented shooters, are something that I think will come around. The turnovers, though, that's something that can actually be worked on and practiced. The kind of the fundamentals of holding on to the basketball and moving it around and avoiding traps and X's and O's things to avoid those presses that work as well.
So when you look at the schedule here as we wrap things up, you look at the home game tonight against Waldorf, an 8 p.m. start, then a couple of games on Sunday and Tuesday. They are on the road at Missouri State and then on the road at a very good Xavier team. Starting tonight, Ross, how are you thinking, or what are you thinking about the outlook for these next three games?
Well, I think you've got a guaranteed win, and then you've got a tough one because it's a road game, and then I think you've got the big one, the game that sort of, if it goes well, can define the season. The game tonight is a non-Division One counter. You can really see when Coach Richmond and I talked about why that UND home and home contract got signed for the next four seasons, why it happened, and he talked about the difficulty of scheduling games, the difficulty of getting other teams to go to Fargo. You've already got two non-Division One counters on the schedule just to get more games in the new Shields Center, and I appreciate them doing that for the fans, but it's a rough look to have that go that way on the schedule. This is an NAIA school. NDSU should win by a lot, but the women's basketball team plays the University of Colorado beforehand, so hopefully there's a few folks in the stands for that and a little bit of a crowd at least to see the new arena on a Tuesday evening. Later game, it's an 8 o'clock start. You don't generally see starts that late in Fargo, but that's what's going on tonight. And then they've got Missouri State, which is a Missouri Valley football opponent of theirs. They're also in the Missouri Valley for basketball. I think the Missouri Valley Conference in basketball is a step up from the Summit League and a league I think that if you asked a lot of Bison basketball fans, they'd love to play in. They'd love to play against Wichita State. They'd love to play against Illinois State. And, of course, they'd love to play against Northern Iowa and start being a part of those recruiting conversations as opposed to playing basically South Dakota State every season for the Summit League Championship. But I digress. This Missouri State team is a pretty average Valley program. They were 137th in the preseason BPI. They played a very strange schedule that, by the way, ranks them about 30 spots behind NDSU. They played a really weird schedule, though. They played something in the Bahamas against non-NCAA teams, potentially even against non-college teams. I don't know what the heck was going on. But then they played a HBCU school in Alabama A&M. They played, I believe, a Division III school that they beat by like 80. Very hard to get a grasp on just how well Missouri State is playing, but that's going to change quickly. They've got NDSU and a couple of other real Division I games coming up on the schedule. So there's a chance that the Bison catch them off guard with a different level of play than they're used to. But that Missouri State game is going to be a real road test for a program that struggled pretty mightily on the road during last season, both in conference and non-conference play. And it's been, I think, a decided point of emphasis this year is to play better on the road. That Missouri State team, I think, will be a really good litmus test for that. And then, of course, you've got the Xavier game. That's the game on the schedule, the same as the Wisconsin game was the game on the schedule in 2006, and the Marquette game was the game on the schedule in 2007. The exact same way that the Iowa State game was the game last year, and the game that they won against Notre Dame the year that they won a tournament game was the game. The Xavier game's the game. It's the game against the number eight team in the country. Xavier's undefeated. They're a Big East team. The Big East won the national championship a season ago, Villanova, and they're going to have a tough road to hoe with two consecutive games against Northern Iowa. They've already won one of those games, and then they're going to play the Bison. So this is a huge, huge deal for NDSU. There's a potential that Xavier still won't have Miles Davis in that game, which I guess maybe gives the Bison a little bit of hope, but that's a true road game. Xavier is a top 10 program. It's not a game that you would normally expect North Dakota State to have a chance to win. And I'm not going to say they can't, but I'm not going to predict it either.
So what are you going to predict for this next three-game stretch?
I think they'll go 2-1. They're going to win tonight, obviously, against Waldorf. And I think that they're able to either, probably get on SportsCenter by beating Xavier, or more likely be able to handle themselves against Missouri State. But I think they end up 6-2 coming out of this, which anytime that you start off a season like that, you can get right on track to win 20 games, which is kind of a benchmark, I think, for this program, just being a good, solid mid-major program that has higher aspirations with the new facilities they have. But obviously those facilities just got here, and the recruiting ramifications of those facilities getting into some different conversations and things like that, that hasn't happened yet. You might see those effects down the line. But right now, I think really a couple of statement games here just to see where they're at in the Missouri Valley, which would be a little bit of a step up, and then to see where they are on the national stage. Can they hang with a Xavier team that's a consistently good squad and consistently good in the NCAA tournament year after year?
Well, that's going to wrap things up. Ross, do you have anything else to add before we close out this episode?
I do not.
All right, well, that's going to conclude it for this week's edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. Again, this is a one-show week with Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday, and then things get pretty crazy until next week for Ross and I, so that's going to be it for this week's info. So we thank you guys for listening. If you can rate and review the podcast on whatever podcasting form you found us at, iTunes, Stitcher, anything you found us at, it does help other NDSU fans find the podcast. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening. Hope everybody has a fantastic Thanksgiving, and go Bison.